SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Pharrell has taken over. Let's go. It's Pharrell.
Coast to coast.
Steaks, chicks, stacks. You and I are going to make a lot of money. It's Pharrell, coast to coast. All right, so here we are back for the third hour. We're going to be going to San Antonio to talk to Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News, Fox Sports, and the Big Ten Network. He's on the take for the Hoosiers. He looks fantastic down there off the Riverwalk. Look at him. Is that like he's looking like pink? I mean, he's got it all going. And at the Alamo Dome for the Final Four festivities, I got a friend going down there to the Final Four. I told him he should go to the TPC on Sunday and watch the golf at the Gasoline Open and then go to the game Monday. He's going Saturday to the hoops. I said, you got to go to the golf Sunday and then see the final round and then go Monday to the title game. I saw your rankings for the Final Four teams, and you obviously have Houston fourth, and that's because at times they struggle putting the ball in the hole. Even in their Elite Eight final, there was a five-minute stretch where they didn't score.
That is who they are, Scott. It's been the nature of this team, but they have won some very big games doing that. I used an example. When they played on the road at Texas Tech, a team you saw in the Elite Eight that was literally 4 minutes from the Final Four, that Houston scored their, I think it was their 44th point around the 16-minute mark. Then they scored their 46th point at about 12 or 13. And then they scored their 48th point at 9 minutes. And they didn't lose the lead. Because Texas Tech couldn't score at all. That's who they are. And so when you're playing against Houston, you have to be able and willing to fight through that. They're not going to make it easy for you. They're going to make it miserable. They're going to make it hard to get rebounds, hard to make initial passes. All of the things that you want to be comfortable doing, they make it hard. And if you are a team playing them, you can't surrender to the difficulty, to the frustration. If you surrender to the frustration of that, that's where they win.
So they're playing Duke, and I just think Duke is phenomenal. And I, you know, what they did defensively to Alabama was we had seen them have 25 threes in the game before, and you knew as a basketball aficionado that you are, and that I believe I am, you knew they weren't getting 25 threes against that defense. And the way they played defense is spectacular. I think Duke and Houston are the two best defensive teams in America and have been all year. The difference for me is, Mike, is that Duke is able to score against good defenses. They're able to score more points than teams like Houston. They're able to put up more. They finished off Alabama, I mean, easily. It just doesn't matter who they play.
Yeah, Duke is a great offensive basketball team, but they haven't had to deal with this before. I mean, Auburn's very good defensively, and they came into Cameron Indoor Stadium, and the Devils were able to get the win. But this is a different level of defense that they're going against, and they know that because, actually, John Shire, 2 years ago, his first year, he wanted to against somebody that was going to make it difficult, and they chose Houston, and Houston agreed to the scrimmage in Houston, and they learned a lesson in that game. In that scrimmage, a private scrimmage, that they can make things really hard for you. It's different then because they had Jamal Shedd, and he was as good against the ball as any guard's been in the last 10 years or so. But this team beats you in other ways defensively. They make it hard to make the initial pass to the wing. They don't allow offensive rebounds. They contest everything inside. I watched JT Toppin, who was an All-American for us, second teamer, go against them for Texas Tech and basically say, nope, I'm not going inside anymore. No fun. I want to do it. I mean, he didn't say it literally, but he said it with his play. He wanted no part of anything that happened within 6-8 feet of the goal from about the 10-minute mark of that game on. And it was a big difference in why Houston was able to win on the road at Tech.
I think that they're spectacular. They're going to make it very difficult. There's no denying that. I just think the same thing's going to happen to them. I think they're really going to have trouble scoring. I think Duke will find a way to score. Do you still believe, like, you know, you haven't told me. Do you think Duke will get past that defense and beat them?
I do. I think that they are the best team here. I think they are the team that looks like a national champion, Scott. I think we've mentioned this before. I've talked about it in a lot of places. You got to have pros. At least that's what the history has been. Since my first Final Four, this is my 35th. My first Final Four was Kansas beating Oklahoma in Kansas City with Danny Manning having the game, as good a game as anybody's had in the Final Four since. Yeah, and ever since then, you have had to have at least one and usually multiple NBA first-round picks in your rotation in order to take home this trophy. And I don't know whether any of the other three teams have that. I think Alex Condon and Thomas Houck of Florida, maybe. I think Tahad Pettiford, if they can overlook his size at Auburn, maybe. Jani Broome's a great player. Maybe somebody takes him at the end of the first round, maybe. Duke's the only team that you look at and say, no doubt. They're going to take those three guys in the top 10. They're going to take Malik Evans, Isaiah Evans, either this year or next year, preferably next year, because if he comes back next year, they're probably going to take him in the lottery as well. So that's what they have over every other team that's here. But they can lose to any of the other three. We've seen that. We've seen them lose to Kentucky, to Kansas, to Clemson. So it's out there for everybody. Right. To try to sort of write the new paradigm, or at least the new paradigm for this year. But there's no question in my mind that Duke is the team that is built most like the typical NCAA champion.
Well, so you have Florida 2 and Auburn 3, and they're playing each other, and they've seen each other. They know each other. They're SEC teams. I kind of like Auburn, their physicality. They're like a football team to me. Their size, their rebounding, their banging, their bangability. They're very tough and physical. And I think Florida's a gifted, talented scoring team, quick transition team that has bigs. But I actually, for my money, I think they're a little soft, their bigs.
Well, you know, I asked Alex Condon about that today because he did look like that in the Texas Tech game for about 35 minutes and then played really tough down those final 5 minutes when Florida won the game, came from 10 down. He was a big part of why they were able to come from 10 down. Got, I think, 3 rebounds, 2 offensive rebounds in those final 5 minutes. I think he made a bucket. He was a big part of that comeback, not as big as Houck making 2 threes or Walter Clayton making 2 and assisting on some others. But he was a big part of it. And so I understand your point. And what Alex told me was that he didn't feel confident playing on his ankle and that affected him. And that as the game wore on, his confidence rebuilt and he was able to be effective when it mattered. And now his ankle's had another 5 days. Then eventually maybe tip it up. He'll have had two more full days on top of that. Hopefully at that point, he's ready to go.
Respectfully, I have 1 minute. What's it like for you? You know, I've been to 30 straight Super Bowl, you know, Radio Rose, media, been to 15 Super Bowls. I've been to a lot of Final Fours and National Championship games, my favorite being Indiana in 87 over Cuse at the Superdome. What's it like for you to go to this many Final Fours and have as much juice as Mike DeCourcy has in the media? You're like a god down there.
Well, Scott, today John Shire couldn't even find me wearing pink in the crowd. I mean, he couldn't find me. So how much juice do I have?
Unbelievable. That's disrespectful. Mike, I love you. Have a blast at the Final Four.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Looks like Mike DeCourcy was on Duke in Florida, if you ask me, Mike. He seemed, you know, the way he ranked them and everything, it seemed like he thinks that Florida's a better team than Auburn. We'll see on Saturday night, won't we?
Yeah, I feel like from obviously we've had a few days of this now, so we've been going back and forth hearing people's grandiose predictions and whatnot. I feel like the Florida-Auburn game is very split. I feel like it's very down the middle. There's a lot of people like me and you who like Auburn. There's a lot of people that like Florida. I think the second game is where you have pretty heavy reliance one way. Most people are on Duke. Honestly, the only really only person I've seen selling Houston so far is Coach. You know, I know Coach has been selling Houston that they're going to beat Duke, and he was telling me again last night on the radio show that Houston's going to beat Duke. So
is Lee still on Memphis? Those guys
are not on Memphis anymore.
Are you kidding me? Who does he like in this thing?
He loves Auburn on Saturday. I think he loves Auburn to win the whole thing. I think it's Auburn and Duke.
I don't know why you love them. Like they're barely better than Florida if they are at all. But they are the number one overall seed.
Auburn.
Like remember, they were the NCAA darling all season. They were the top team in college basketball season. They lost three or four, and they still gave them the number one overall seed. Like for Christ's sakes, you can't even make it up. How do you lose three or four going out and you're the top overall seed over Duke?
Not easy to do here. How about that? Little base hit for Brendan Rodgers up the middle is going to score one, make it two runs, 4-2 Houston in the top of the fourth inning in Minneapolis now. So we do have a lot of runs going across up there. All right, I wanted to play these two coaches. They were both introduced yesterday for their new jobs. Here's the great Kevin Willard, who jumped ship from Maryland over to Villanova. Here he is talking about why he wanted to go to Villanova. And at the end of the day, he doesn't want to talk about how things went at Maryland anymore.
Obviously, I think some of my comments during the NCAA tournament probably could have been a little bit less abrasive. But unfortunately, sometimes when my passion for my program, my passion for my players come out, I get a little excited. The only thing I'm going to say is normal fans just don't understand what went on. I had such a great team. I was so focused on my team. I was so focused on my players. Winning those two games, hitting a buzzer beater against Colorado State, being out west with my team for 12 days was such a great experience for me. We had so much fun out there. The timeline, no one knows it, no one understands it. I can't change that, and I'm not worried about that. All I'm going to say is that, you know, Maryland just got a great coach and Buzz, and I'm really happy for them, and I'm super excited to be at a great basketball conference here, and I just think it's time that everyone move on.
Okay, so here, let me move on to this then, Coach. Thanks so much for all your advice. This guy has been to one Sweet 16. He is the most overrated basketball coach I've ever seen in my life that keeps getting big jobs. I mean, honest to God. Like, let's just stop with all this nonsense. And it's pretty obvious he's a backstabber. I mean, like, what more do you need to know the way he handled the scene in Maryland? Right? Like, who didn't he throw under the bus at Maryland? And then, like, he lied through his teeth the whole time. Like, so we know who he really is now, full on. So enjoy him while you got him in there, and watch your wallets and cell phones.
Watch your wallets and cell phones, indeed. So Buzz Williams was introduced at Maryland. Did he hear all of the things that Kevin Willard was saying last week about the program and how there needs to be more that gets done, etc.? Buzz apparently knew nothing about that when he took the Maryland job.
Liar.
Here we go.
I think that that's not to speak ill towards Coach Willard or the team. I didn't hear all of it, nor do I think all of it's important. But relative to what I thought was important on the commitment going forward, on what is needed to be successful at the highest level, there was never any question from them on the commitment for us, me, the staff, NIL, the players, the resources, the Gossett Center. I saw that this morning with a hard hat on. Like, I don't know how many of those will be available in August. That's going to be the best in the country. So I'm not trying to be argumentative on anything, but I'm at peace with all of it.
Okay.
He's
at
peace.
One guy said they're cheap as F, and the other guy says it's the greatest situation I've ever seen in my life, and we got a new arena. I'll give him this. He's got a new arena. And I'll give him this. He can coach. I'll also give him this. This guy moves around like a United Van Lines. Like him in 6 years at College Park, he'll be gone in 3 years. 4 years max, he'll be gone again. All he does is change jobs. This guy has changed jobs 5 times. I mean, like, honestly, he's from Texas, and he walked on them. And they got more money than God down there in College Station to go to Maryland. And I got to tell you, look, I think Maryland's pretty decent in basketball. I'll give them that. I think they are. I really do. But nothing else. I mean, like, it's not that attractive. Are you kidding me? Yeah. I mean, I could talk about 7 programs in the Big Ten that are more attractive. At least. When I got 14 teams, half of the conference is better than Maryland in terms of, like, let's just get real here. Like, what, you're going to tell me Maryland's better than Michigan? Going, like, coaching at Ann Arbor?
No.
Or at Michigan State? Or at Indiana? Indiana's got more juice than Maryland in terms of basketball. They got 5 national championships.
And he's going to have to basically start over, kind of like what Cal did at Arkansas last year, because half the team's in the portal already, and the other half are either don't have any more eligibility, or the kid Queen's going to go to the draft. You know that.
He's going to the NBA.
Yeah, where he's going to the NBA. So he's basically starting from the ground up. And now you could do that faster in college nowadays because of the portal. You can get a good team fairly quickly.
Coach.
But the guy who just left told me that they're not gonna spend money. That's what the guy who just left pretty much just told you. So we'll see how it goes.
And the guy that was running the program couldn't get out of there fast enough. His boss bolted. He's like, I'm out of here.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
So I guess people, like I said to you on the show, that they're going to get over to Chris Beard domestic violence stuff from Austin going back in the day, because it didn't take long for him to get an offer to leave Ole Miss, did it?
Yeah, Texas A&M wasn't worried about it. They were willing to offer him a deal, but he rejected that. And instead, he's going to get some more money out of Ole Miss. So Ole Miss has given Chris Beard some more years, some more money. And
I think
honestly,
it's a way cooler place.
Well, A, it's a way cooler place. And B, you know, after what happened at Texas, this guy was, like you said, he was kind of cast aside because of what happened. And Ole Miss is the spot that, you know, gave him the first crack, you know, first chance to get back into it. And he's provided them with one of their best seasons in school history. They just made a Sweet 16, which they have only done, I think, twice ever at that school. So I think for him also, I think, and there's no loyalty in college coaching. We know that. But I honestly think he owes them a little something and not to go run out of there after 2 years. So I think he should be staying in Oxford for a little bit longer.
I mean,
and finish
enough.
The gig.
Fair enough. But I also think that, you know, you got a powerful tree there with Lane Kiffin and this guy running their basketball and football programs. Look, he's a great coach. The program's already better served having him there. They made the Sweet 16. And they're going to get players there now to play for him because he's a great coach, without a doubt. It doesn't matter what people think of him, of what happened years ago in Austin. Like, keep talking about that while he's winning. Like, you know, keep talking about the past while he's in the moment winning.
I'm interested to see who's actually going to get that job, because that's a good job. They print money down there. In college
would
stage.
You go after the McCaslin at Texas Tech, or do you think he'll leave there for that? I think he's got a better job now.
I would stay at Texas Tech. Look, you know what? They'll probably pay him a lot more at Texas A&M. That's the one thing. They have so much money there that, you know, they can outspend. But the other thing is you're so late now into this. Like, you're weeks after the portal's open. You're weeks after all this other coach shuffling. Going to be interested to see who they end up going with out there moving forward. All right, how about hockey?
Everybody loves hockey.
We got a lot of games tonight, which we're probably going to have to do all those in leftovers after you talk to Adam. But let me at first tell you, Leafs with the win over the Panthers last night. Now, this is very significant. If Luke could bring me up that E standings real fast, Luke, I'm going to make Luke do some traffic work here. Look at that. So now Florida, Scotty, if you look, the Leafs, I should say, they have now opened up some space in that Atlantic division to where they have a 3-point lead over Tampa and a 4-point lead over Florida. And I think that's significant because, you know, two of those three teams are going to have to play each other in the first round. The other team's probably going to play Ottawa in the first round. You want to avoid, if you're the Toronto and you've had the problems you've had in the playoffs,
you want Ottawa.
Staying away from Tampa and Florida in the first round would probably be the best medicine. So, huge win for the Maple Leafs last night on that front. The Rangers won in overtime, and that gets them even in points with Montreal, as you saw up there. They both have 79 after last night. The Rangers have played one more game, though, and they do have more regulation wins, but because they've played one more game, they are still technically behind Montreal in the standings. Colorado needed a shootout to beat Chicago, and the Canes beat the Caps 5-1. Ovi scored 892. He is three away from the record. He's going to get it. I mean, it's minus 500 now. He's scoring. He's got like six games left. But as I have told you for weeks, he's going to break the record against the Islanders. They're playing Chicago tomorrow night against the Black. They're in Chicago against the Blackhawks. I bet you'll score one or two goals against Chicago. And then Sunday at the horse track, he'll break the record against the Isles with only three goals to go.
Yeah, I have no problem with that. I don't care when, where, how. I just want it to happen. I think it's very exciting for him. And obviously, it's great for the league. And I think it's deserved. I think the guy's a sniper like I've never seen. He's had a great rivalry with Crosby through the years. Crosby's got the three. He's got one in terms of cups. But when you got your name on the cup, it doesn't matter. You got your name on the cup. You got one. He can live with that. And then if he breaks Gretzky, I mean, Stanley Cup and the record of the most goals ever in the history of the game, I think he'll sleep well at night.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Kaplan is our NFL insider extraordinaire on Coast to Coast and on Sports Grid, and you can follow him at Kaplan NFL. He's covered the NFL for almost 30 years. He's been with us here 6 years on C2C, and we love having him every week talking NFL Pain Day football. They've been in West Palm, the owners' meetings, and they've been talking a lot about rule changes. Why don't you kick it off there?
All right, Scott. So every year in March, this is where we see changes, right? They'll confirm things are going to stay, and some things are going to change in the future for the upcoming season. And sometimes, by the way, they're permanent. So let's get started with the dynamic kickoff situation. So you saw last year, it was a complete change. They looked at other leagues. They wanted to make the kickoff more exciting. They thought it worked well. I was told a couple months ago that it was going to stay. And the other thing that I thought would happen. They move the kickoffs now. So the as you know, Scott, it's been so boring for a number of years. Yes, they're going to stay with the dynamic kickoff. But the other thing is, listen, if it goes into the end zone, the touchback's going to go from the 30, last year from the 35. Now, that one was a lot of special teams coaches I talked to said that would probably happen. It did. They're still tweaking this. They still want the kickoff to not only stay. I know when they've changed some things over the years for player safety, there are all sorts of rumors. Oh, the league wants the kickoff out. No, they don't. They want it to be more exciting. So they're doing that. Now, the other thing is they're going to move the overtime rule, Scott. They're going to go with the playoff rules in the regular season, which now, Scott, they're going to, both teams will have one possession. That you can't have separate rules. So they're going to have that. That was such a no-brainer. Now, but the thing that I absolutely love is the playoff, the replay assist, Scott. You've seen that. One of the big things that we've all had problems with is the consistency in officiating, right? Get it right, and we've had this replay assist. Well, they're going to expand it, and they're going to make sure that fouls include tripping, roughing the kicker, face mask, horse collar tackles. Scott, sometimes the refs can't see in real time. They're going to miss things. Well, that's where they're expanding this replay assist. Thank goodness they're doing this. And I would like to see other sports do it. You know, the NBA has replay, which they've brought in recent years. But I just like that the NFL is about getting it right. And you know how sometimes fans will go on social media and accuse game a ref for being on the take and all that stuff, which obviously nonsense. But the NFL gets it right again with replay assist. I'm glad that they're doing that. And the other thing, Scott, is this thing. I don't know why they didn't do it years ago. Okay, how can a $1 billion business not get it right with measurements? So no more chain gang. The chain gang is out. They're there. There is a backup now. If they can't get it right with video, with the Hawkeye system by Sony, so they're going to replace the traditional chain gang. They're going to get it right by video. Thank goodness this come in. Think about it: the ridiculousness of them getting it wrong for decades, when sometimes it's very clear when you could see on TV that by replay that it's so clear that the guy got the first down. And now they're going to get it right. No more guessing by refs with the chain gang. They're actually going to get it right with video.
Or watching the guy run in from the sideline and veering. He's veering. Yeah. And the spots are so bad. But go back so people can have a clear understanding of the overtime rules. They're both going to get the ball. But explain what you mean, because – I think a lot of people are confused because it was always bad. They did playoffs one way, regular season another.
Exactly. So they're going to keep it. They're going to keep it consistent with both. So the playoff rules, Scott, as you know, because of what happened with Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen over the years, they changed it to make sure both teams got a possession, but they kept the regular season one way, as you mentioned, the playoffs another. So now they're taking the playoff rules, and now both teams in the regular season will get the ball in overtime. Which, by the way, they had to do. You can't have separate rules, and they're going to change that, and that's what they want, because look, it's a quarterback driven league. You can't cheat these great quarterbacks of not getting the ball in overtime just because the other team scores first. So you're going to have that, and that's something that's been a long time coming. And look, it's not just the competition committee, it's coaches. Who, by the way, are on the competition committee. I've talked to a number of coaches over the years. They have a say in it. Yes, the owners have the final say. They're the ones who vote, but they have a lot of input. And by the way, we should also mention there's a lot of lobbying that goes on. Families and general managers and head coaches and owners, they get there. I know that they're there over the weekend, but a lot of them get there last Thursday, and they start lobbying each other over the weekend, and then the meetings start on Sunday. And get heavy on Monday, and then the voting comes Tuesday, and then Tuesday afternoon, everyone disperses for the week. And the owners' meetings used to be actually 4 or 5 days, so now they're much shorter. And now what will happen, Scott, is we'll talk more about this when we come back from the break, though. Then you have the May meeting, right? The May meeting, you have more potential votes, and that's it. They have a late December meeting, but that has nothing to do with what happens here until next March is when you get the votes over again. So. And they're always in a warm climate, by the way. This one's in West Palm Beach at the Breakers, which seems to be there every 5 or 6 years in West Palm Beach. In the Biltmore in Phoenix, which I've been to a number of times, but they're always in a warm climate. And one year, Scott, back in California, they had them at Dana Point. And my understanding was Andy Reid, who grew up in the L.A. area, recommended that. That was at the St. Regis, and that was an amazing owners' meetings overlooking cliffs, but it's a pretty relaxed atmosphere. You can get to a lot of great conversations with NFL people, but the rule changes are super big. And you know, it's funny, they used to wait, Scott, they used to wait. Remember the compensatory picks? They would happen there in late March and early April, but now they're not even waiting. They do that usually about 2 or 3 weeks before the owners' meetings to find out what extra picks you're going to have for the draft.
Were you surprised that Rooney started talking about, he feels like Rodgers is moving toward signing with the Steelers, because teams are always tight-lipped about this stuff completely until they have a deal done.
Well, they don't have a deal done, but what I find interesting is he went on the record saying that. You're right, usually with roster moves. And how about Metcalf working out with Rodgers, which obviously would give an indication. But, you know, I would say this, that the understanding that I've had for the last couple of weeks is, boy, he was hoping that the Vikings would have a lot of interest in him. They have passing interest. The Vikings want J.J. McCarthy to be that guy, okay? I know he didn't play last season in the regular season. He only played one game in the preseason against the Raiders. He looked great, by the way. And you got to give Kevin O'Connell, the head coach, who's the play caller and quarterback developer, he did a phenomenal job. J.J. McCarthy, Scott, at this time last year, I was telling you, because it was true, that there were some teams that I talked to, just like with Bo Nix, who had late second round, early third round grades on McCarthy. And I'll give McCarthy credit. And I thought that was kind of a reach for McCarthy. And still, he's not played the regular season. And they very much want him to be their long-term solution at quarterback. That's going to be the situation. Now, he had meniscus surgery, Scott. He had the full-blown repair. They're not going to know about how good he's going to look, A, until he gets into their offseason program. What I understand is his rehab on that knee has been great. They want to see him in April, in late April, right before the draft. They get their offseason program going a little bit. They can't really coach him in that, but they could see him move around. They want to see in the post-draft minicamp, they want to see how he looks. But the bottom line is he's their future. They've got a great thing going there with McCarthy, Kevin O'Connell and the job he's done. And Brian Flores, by the way, their outstanding defensive coordinator who should get a chance to be a head coach again. But the bottom line is it's about J.J. McCarthy. That's why, by the way, they went in with one foot, not both, with bringing Darnold back. They had interest in bringing Sam Darnold back, but they didn't want to go all the way, and that's why Darnold wound up signing with the Seahawks.
So is he, yes or no, on schedule right now with that meniscus repair to play football?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Oh, he absolutely is. But they want to see him move around, though. Until he practices, you got to see what he looks like.
All right, when we come back, we'll talk about Philly's problem. Everyone trying to get their tush push banned.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We're talking to Adam Kaplan, our NFL insider. Per usual, every week we do the same thing. Thank God for that, about the NFL and everything going on. This week, they've had these owners' meetings at the Breakers in West Palm Beach, Florida, along the east coast of Florida, down in sunny South FLA at that fancy Breakers. Great spot. But anyway, it seemed like everyone was arguing the most about the tush push.
Yeah, Scott. Covering these meetings for 27 years off and on, I could tell you that talking to coaches that were there and front office people, I've not seen something so hotly discussed. And there it was really interesting. So I'm going to give you the Cliff Notes version, but I can go back to the combine. So I was told by a high-ranking NFL official there was no momentum at all for even discussion over it because it was player safety checked off. There was no increased risk. The league knew this. Based on their stats, their injury data. So there was no movement, but there was the thing that there were two arguments, right? One was player safety check. There was none of that. But the big thing, Scott, was this. Is it a football play, the push play that the Eagles run? And by the way, the Bills also run it too on a couple of other teams, but the Eagles were the leaders. But the question is it a football play? Because you're pushing the quarterbacks back. Okay, for decades, it was an illegal play. Now, 20 years ago, for whatever reason, the NFL removed the language that would ban it. So the Eagles figured this out. Nick Sirianni was chief among them, the head coach, and they put it in. They became experts at it. What I find funny is they were not as successful last year. They were the other teams started to catch up with it a little bit. They were still dominant at it, but really good at it. And the other part about it, and let's call it like it is, because I could tell you from talking to coaches about it from other teams, there's a little bit of competitive jealousy. Yes, you can debate, and I think it's a fair discussion, whether it's a legal play or not, whether it's a competitive advantage but by pushing a player in the back, which for decades you were not allowed to do. But the other part of it is, look at the Packers who complain about it, Scott. The Eagles took them out this year in the playoffs. They beat them in the first game in Brazil, okay? You got the Rams, who haven't beaten the Eagles in a long time. The Eagles took them out in the playoffs. They dominated them in L.A. when they went there in the past two seasons. That's part of it. Let's call it like it is. They'll never admit that, obviously. But there's a belief around the league there's some competitive jealousy. I have no problem with people arguing whether it should be a legal play, because if you're pushing a player in the back, defensive players can't do that. I get that. But the bottom line is you can blame the NFL. Why did they take the language out 20 years ago? That's ridiculous. So this has been a big thing for general managers, for head coaches, and owners. Now, what I find funny is, Scott, is Roger Goodell, who's kind of like Switzerland. He's always in the middle. He doesn't want to take sides. He started talking about this week. Clearly, there's a movement within the owners to ban this thing again. And by the way, that's why it's been tabled. It's been tabled till the May meetings. And Scott, look, half the league was they didn't take a vote on it. It's been tabled. But clearly, the word around the league is at least half the league will vote against it. And by the way, the Commanders are against it. The Cowboys are against it. And the Giants are against it, obviously.
Because they play them and they lose to them. And let me tell you something. Here's the deal. I agree with everything you've said. The only thing that I think that, frankly, I have a problem with is if you can shove from the offensive side, you should be able to shove from the defensive side. Secondly, here's the problem. If you're such a badass, why can't you stop it? No one can stop it. They're all a bunch of pansy ass. They get pushed around and they don't like it and they can't stop it. If you can't stop it, you lose. It's no different than you couldn't stop Michael Jordan, you lose.
You know what's funny on what you just said? Kevin Stefanski, the Browns head coach, has been on the record twice saying that it's a good play. We just have to stop it. John Harbaugh, who's been involved, you know, who was one of the best special teams coaches for many years before he became the Ravens head coach, he went on a record saying it's not a problem. I mean, we just have to stop it. So, again, I think the competitive jealousy part, I think that's real. I don't think there's any question about it. You know, and in the end, Scott, it's going to be voted out. There's no question. When the commissioner goes on record, it questions whether it should be a play or not. This has got to be come from the owners. He works on the behest of the owners. If it doesn't happen in May, it's going to happen at some point over the next couple of years. It's just the way it is, Scott. But it's amazing when a team is this dominant. Like, think of it this way, Scott. If the Raiders were the team that was successful with it, do you think anyone would care? No, of course not. Just the Eagles are an elite team, and that's part of it.
I agree. All right, so Christmas Day. I've heard a couple things. Yeah. I also heard what you're going to talk about, and I also heard that, like, Mahomes, like, and the Chiefs want to play on Christmas every year, just like the Lions play on Thanksgiving. Is there truth to that?
That had come out this week, by the way, coming from Chiefs people, that the Chiefs would love to play on Christmas going forward. And by the way, last year, the ratings were phenomenal. For the two Christmas games, and now they're going to go to three. Netflix will have two, Amazon will have one. And I was just thinking when this got announced, for years, for decades, let's call it like it is, the NBA has owned Christmas Day. Not anymore. To the point now where, Scott, what will the NBA do to counteract this? Are they going to do Christmas Eve? Because that's what's left. The NFL, as you know, has got the three games on Thanksgiving. What's left for now for the NBA?
Who cares? More people want to watch the NFL on Christmas Day, and that's simple. You lose. Like, it's that simple. Christmas Eve. You know what a lot of people do on Christmas Eve? A lot of people go out to dinner on Christmas Eve. They don't want any part of it. So they go out to dinner, and they go to fancy restaurants. No one cares about the NBA that much that they're going to blow off their Christmas Eve dinners to watch NBA games. NBA on Christmas was fine, but it's never been better than the NFL, and it never will be because it's boring.
I know, but the cool thing is, though, we're going to get nothing. Football on Christmas. I love it. I love it, to be honest with you. I do.
I loved watching my Steelers lose to the Chiefs by 30. It was fantastic.
Good job, Russell.
I can't get enough of it. I got to pay for my season tickets, too, by the way, and we don't even have a quarterback, the humanity of it all. Adam, great stuff, my man. Thank you very much.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Everybody loves leftovers.
Everybody does love them, that's for sure. And we have all the hockey for tonight that we
Everybody
have
loves
in
hockey.
As well. Everybody loves hockey. Let's go. Bruins in Montreal tonight up at the Bell. Minus 200 flat now I've got for the Habs. Plus 170 for the Bruins at a 5.5.
Yeah, I like Montreal even on the puck line to beat the Bruins' ass and get a $1.30 out of it because they've been playing great hockey all of a sudden.
Lightning trying to track down Toronto for first in the Atlantic. We were talking about it earlier. They're minus 140 favorites in Ottawa tonight against the Senators with a 5.5.
Yeah, I kind of like Tampa here.
Tampa tonight. Colorado off the shootout win in Chicago. They are in Columbus against the Blue Jackets, who, of course, need every point they can get. Colorado minus 145 on the road, plus 125 for the Jackets and a 6.5.
I'll take the Sports Jackets in Columbus. They play great there, and I think Colorado been on the road, barely won last night, have to travel and play another one tonight. I'll take the Jackets.
The St. Louis Blues have won, not one,
Forget
not two,
it.
Not three, not four, not five, not six, not seven, eight, not nine, 10 in a row for the Blues as they get ready for the Penguins tonight in St. Louis. Blues minus 230, Penguins plus $1.95.
I mean, they've been scoring 7, 8, 9 goals in games. Like, they're going to win. They're 11 straight. They're going to kick the Penguins' ass, puck line it, make money, plus $1.10 to lay the goal and a half.
Dallas playing the heavy lumber at home tonight against the Predators, minus 280 for the Stars now with a 6.5.
Another one, puck line at Stars, roll over the Predators at the American Airlines and lay the goal and a half at a cheap price of minus $1.15. It's not that bad.
The Kings are in Salt Lake City against the Hockey Club tonight. Minus 135 for the Kings on the road, a 5.5.
I like the Kings on the road. Go out and kick this team's ass. Come on, they're way better.
The Ducks are in Calgary against the Flames. Calgary minus $1.55 now with a 5.5.
You know what? I got to be honest with you. Well, that price is just outrageous with the Ducks getting a goal and a half. I'll take a shot. Ducks outright at that price. Outright at what is it? I'm at least $1.35 if they win the game.
$1.35.
I think Calgary will pike.
They're pretty much out of it now at this point anyway. Two of the best in the West here at Winnipeg in Vegas at the T-Mobile. Vegas minus $1.50, 5.5.
I'll go high risk as well with the Jets at plus $1.30 to win at the T-Mobile.
The Oilers are at the Shark Tank tonight against San Jose. Heavy lumber on the road, minus 3 bills for the Oilers and a 6.5.
Give me the puck and a half at even money with the Sharks at the tank. The Oilers will be sleepwalking tonight in San Jose, bored to death.
They probably will. There you go, your hockey.
Everybody loves
for
hockey.
Tonight. Geno Smith, of course, traded to the Raiders, gets himself a new 2-year extension to go along with his trade to the Raiders. I don't know what they're doing. The Patriots trade Jersey Joe Milton. Remember, he played that game, the last game of the year for the Pats against the Bills, and he played pretty good. Well, Milton and a 7th-rounder to the Cowboys for a 5th-round pick. NFL Red Zone host Scott Hansen will be the new in-game voice for EA Sports Madden 26. Congrats to him.
Wait, now, time out. I got three left. Yes. Couldn't he have, kept his job at Red Zone and still done that? The video game
I didn't know
voice.
He was leaving the job at Red Zone. I think he's still doing the Red Zone, isn't he? I didn't know that he was going to stop doing the Red Zone.
I thought he was leaving
Zone.
That.
I think that was all something else. I think they were just pulling
all right,
away.
So he's gonna do both. Good
that
for
guy,
him.
He ain't giving up that gig. Reports say there are no guarantees Arch Manning is going to enter the 2026 NFL draft. And why would he?
What a travesty.
Roll over millions in NIL money. FIFA president Gianni Infantino says United States and United Kingdom are going to host the 31 and 35 Women's World Cup, and nobody will care. And here you go, the Nike Kobe 6 Ice Grinch to send you out today.
What do we got
icicle
here?
Sneakers. We might have to hold those off to tomorrow. I think we pushed that too close to the end.
Hold that off until tomorrow. But I want a pair of those. Those things are badass. For all of it, Jean-Claude Van Damme has been accused allegedly of sex with a trafficked woman in Romania. That is a horrible story. Although I have been to Romania and I've drank bull's blood and it was fantastic and I got hammered. GTD is next with the Kevin Walsh. Check out my app. Search for L. It's badass. You'll love it. We'll see you tomorrow at 3. A Coast to Cut.